After the devastation of wildfire, plants regenerate. Burnt trees sprout so-called hairy trunks, and new shoots poke out of the ground, growing from seeds roused from dormancy by the fire. People have known for centuries that fires spawn new plant life, but it's only now that scientists are figuring out how. Turns out the key ingredient is smoke, and that's why we talked about the benefits of smoking in this particular circumstance. According to research published this week in the journal Science, there's a chemical component of smoke that works wonders on seeds. The chemical is called butanolide, and it makes the fire-sensitive seeds germinate, sometimes within as little as 24 hours. If you're a gardener, you can probably imagine that this chemical might come in handy for sprucing up your plantings with some extra variety. Think on a larger scale, it could prove very useful for all sorts of commercial crops. So if you'd like to join our conversation about butanolide or other burning issues that might come to mind, our number is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. With us now to tell us all about his work on smoke and germination is Dr. Kingsley Dixon, an author of the science paper. Dr. Dixon is the director of science at King's Park and Botanic Garden and adjunct professor in plant biology at the University of Western Australia in Perth. He joins us by phone from his home in West Perth, Australia, where it is very, very early in the morning. So thank you for your early wake-up call and joining us today, Dr. Dixon.
Oh, good afternoon, Joe.
Thank you. You're very kind to think in our terms. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
So I mentioned that it's not a big surprise to anyone, I suppose, that there are certain plants that like to grow after fires. But maybe you can tell us a little bit about the history of human knowledge about this topic and how you came to be interested in it.
Sure. The interesting thing with most things that we're now finding in science, particularly the biological sciences, is that traditional cultures probably knew about these benefits but didn't have the knowledge to understand why things were working. And some recent work that's been published out of Africa has indicated that tribes in Africa would smoke maize cobs and certain seeds, including red rice, to get them to germinate and grow in a far improved manner. And it's that sort of work that's really been pushing us along, and indeed some early work by some wonderful botanists from the National Botanical Institute in Cape Town back in 1989, where they found indeed that where we thought it was the heat in the ash from fires, be it forest fires, prairie fires, or bushfires in Australia, that it appeared that the smoke, the third element, and the most conspicuous, was probably the most potent part in stimulating germination from often long dormant seed banks.
So in other words, people thought once upon a time that some other physical component of the fire, like the heat or the smoke, was the key, and you're finding something else.
Well, the heat in the ash was originally thought to be
heat in the ash.
The key.
I'm sorry.
And many of us around the world, there's many eminent American, Australian, African, and European researchers worked on heat and ash, and we kept applying heat and ash, and there was this whole range of wonderful species, superb things from the Californian flora, for example, wonderful wildflowers in the poppy family, which we still couldn't get to germinate. And we thought, wow, this is really enigmatic. And once we got to the smoke discovery in 89, it seemed as though things were going to be a lot clearer. And indeed, a remarkable range of species from around the world began to germinate. And many new plants in horticulture over the last 20 years have come from that smoke work. The Holy Grail, though, was there an agent in the smoke, a chemical species, that was responsible for that germination? And so for about the last 13 years, there's been four groups internationally working feverishly away to try and isolate and purify the compound.
And now we can anoint you the winner?
I don't like to look at it as a race, but and speaking to my colleagues in Germany, California, and South Africa, they've congratulated us, but they would have liked to have been in the same spot.
I see. Well, we'll make you the first ever Science Friday awardee for the winner of the international competition for the search for butanolide. Did I say that right? Is it butanolide?
Yeah, it's in a class of compounds.
Yeah.
Because of the molecular structure, which are essentially two two rings joined together and some attached groups. It's in the class of compounds called butanolides. But in recognition of a really remarkable member of our research team who I think has really been a superb supporter and thinker through this, the PhD student Gavin Flamarty, who's just concluding his PhD on this very topic, since he works so well on this, we've titled the compound Gavinone in recognition.
Got it. You're very generous. Now, let me ask you, is this compound going to make any seed germinate, or does it have to be a particular plant species that's likely to germinate following a fire?
Yeah, Joe, the really fascinating thing, although it's still early days in the discovery, and we have confirmed that all of the species that we've been able to get good seed that are normally fire-following, whether they're Californian, Midwest prairie species, African or Australian species, respond in a predictable manner as if they'd been either through a wildfire or had been applied with smoke. So we've confirmed that, and indeed that's what the science publication brings out in the first instance.
Okay. Our number here is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. And let's invite our listeners to join this conversation. Let's go first to Jack in Charlotte, North Carolina. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you. I just have a quick question. I did a year or so of development studies in South Africa, usually on community-based agriculture programs. And noticed that they were mostly growing tobacco, A, because it's sold, and B, because it was fairly hardy in terms of that environment. Is this something that might help folks grow food in areas or in soils that otherwise would not be suitable for growing food?
Was the conversation? Was the question clear to you, Doctor?
Yeah.
Because Doctor Dixon, because it's a little distorted on my end. You were able to understand it?
Yeah. No. That's
okay.
No problem at all.
Okay.
Jack. It's an interesting comment. What the butanolide or Gavinone really does is it breaks dormancy in a range of species that would otherwise be difficult or impossible to germinate. So it means there will be a range of species now available for people to germinate reliably under cropping or horticultural situations. We've started some initial testing on vegetable and some crop species and found that the butanolide gives remarkable germination in things such as lettuce, parsley, celery, and even echinacea. And one of the test species that we've used is, in fact, an American tobacco. It's interesting you mentioned tobacco, Indian tobacco, Nicotiana attenuata. And indeed, that's been shown in previous work by American researchers to be stimulated by smoke. But indeed, it's the chemical butanolide that, in fact, stimulates Indian tobacco.
So I've always wondered what gave people the idea of drying and subsequently burning tobacco leaves to begin with. I wonder if this has something to do with it.
Well, I think that's to do with a thing called nicotine.
But how did they know? That's what I'm interested in. Well, anyway, let's stick to this topic, and maybe we can go to Steve in Nampa. Is that Idaho?
Yes.
Oh, well, welcome to the program, Steve.
Well, thanks for having me. I have a pretty quick question. In northern Idaho, grass seed growers annually burn the grass to germinate the seed for the next crop. And this is a requirement in that particular growing climate, and of course the burning and the smoke creates a lot of animosity with local residents and who are sensitive to the smoke. So I'm wondering, could this material that you've kind of centered on here, this chemical that you've picked out, could that be produced in such a way that you could apply it separately as an individual component to the seed to create the germination required without actually burning it?
So synthesize the chemical, spray it on the crops, and just dig up the crops at the end of the year so that you wouldn't have to burn them.
Exactly.
Okay. What do you think about that, Dr. Dixon?
Yeah, Steve, there's a fascinating concept, and I've got colleagues at the Chicago Botanic Garden that we've begun working with on prairie species. The evidence that we've got at this stage is that it's exactly what you're saying, that much of the germination of these grassland species is probably linked to a smoke response, and that the chemical that we've discovered will replace that requirement. We're working here in Australia on doing exactly the same thing, because people are saying, particularly in urban areas where burning has been a more traditional practice to regenerate wild species, that there's a potential now to use the chemical. The intriguing aspect of our work is that the concentrations that this chemical acts on are some of the lowest ever recorded in the biological sciences. To use a very crude analogy, it's about a third of a teaspoon in a domestic swimming pool. That's containing about 30 tons of water. And then you've got enough smoke water to spray onto vegetables or wild species. So we're pretty excited that it has broad landscape potentialities.
Steve, thanks for the call. So I'm wondering, is there any knowledge about what's the receptor or the thing in the plant that's actually responding to the butanolide?
We originally thought that, based on some work out of the University of California in Riverside, that it was going to improve the permeability of these many different species to water. We've done all those tests and shown that it doesn't actually alter the water permeability. Some work out of the University of Texas and the Max Planck Institute of Chemical Ecology in Germany, however, points to what we're very suspicious is happening, is that this chemical acts at very low levels to act like a key to unlock a range of other chemicals in the sea that then do the work to break dormancy. And the most prominent group that we think this chemical will unlock are the gibberellic acids, which are well known to be germination promoters. And in many seeds that can live in soil for 50 years that we've recorded, the pools of gibberellic acid can lie dormant, and this chemical may provide the key that unlocks those dormant pools, and then the magic of germination proceeds.
Yeah, magic is the word, because I've was just seeing there are some plant species now that have been grown from seeds that are, what, hundreds of years old.
That's correct.
So it's quite stunning. All right, let's take another call. Juliet in San Rafael, is that California?
Yes, it is.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you. This is so interesting. I've been very active in land use and fire interest. And what I'm concerned about is that because of the overgrowth of underbrush in California, because the fires have been put out so systematically, that what's happened to the soil with these very, very hot fires is the soil composition changes. It will not hold water. And I'm wondering if in that kind of instance, the very positive aspects of the fire that have been talked about on this program are no longer valid.
Thank you for the call, Juliet. What about that, Dr. Dixon?
Yeah, I understand from colleagues in California that one of the other major issues following fire is the overseeding of burnt sites, often with non-indigenous grass species to the area. And as a result, there's almost a permanent alteration in the biodiversity at that site, leading to all sorts of kick-on effects. This is primarily done to stop soil erosion if there's heavy rain. I can only say that from our experience in Australia and certainly the African experience, letting Mother Nature do its normal things after a fire is absolutely critical to ensuring that you don't have biodiversity loss following some of these very nasty large wildfires.
Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and I'm Joe Palca, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's take another call, this from Jack in Elkhorn, Wisconsin. Jack, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I've participated in some prairie fires and some grass burnings. I'm wondering, we try to have a real hot, fast fire. Would we be better off burning when it was wetter and producing more smoke?
Another interesting question, Jack.
Yeah.
What do you think, Dr. Dixon?
Yeah, it's fascinating, and I think the first thing that really needs to be done now that we know what the chemical is in smoke that's really giving us this germination. It would be fascinating to germinate those species that Jack thinks really need the smoke, to actually germinate them under laboratory conditions. You know, these are quite quick trials. You know, in generally under 3 weeks we've got the results, and you can say, yep, it is the smoke that is important, and therefore to maximise germination you might need to alter the temperature at which the fire combusts to maximise the smoke benefits. Of course, as we heard earlier, you need to be a little careful about issues such as smoke and the discomfort it can cause people.
Right. Let's go to Andrew in Raleigh, North Carolina. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. First, I want to say hello to Dr. Dixon. This is Andrew.
Hello, Andrew.
Yeah. How are you doing?
How do you two know each other?
Colleagues and friends in the botanical community.
Yeah,
so this is, you're cheating. You're calling, you're using our nickel to call Australia.
Any way you can.
Okay.
I do have a question, and that is, I know this is a relatively recent discovery and that the smoke water is commercially available, but are there plans to make this compound in a more pure form commercially available and available for seed germination research?
Well, thanks, Andrew. It's a good comment. Didn't stumble across the chemical, when we'd worked so hard towards the chemical and realized that it was a unique chemical to science, new to science and new in biology, we protected that by lodging a patent, and that was lodged 5 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
The other good thing is that the work has now synthesized the chemical, and it acts at such low quantities, as I've already illustrated, that we would expect sometime in the next 3 years, maybe 5 years, depending on the research outcomes, we would expect a commercial product to be available. And we're not expecting, although the synthesis is not a simple one, it's not an impossibly difficult one to do, and we would expect that it won't be a highly priced product. So we expect that there will be an opportunity to replace the smelly smoke water that we buy from time to time to use to germinate indigenous species.
Okay. Andrew, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Okay, well, Dr. Dixon, I'm afraid that's about all the time we have. I have to say I learned a lot. I didn't know that smoke water was available. I didn't know that there was a compound in smoke water that you could isolate. I didn't know that there were various things that made seeds germinate. So, you know, it's been a wonderful education for me this afternoon.
Oh, thank you very much. It's been a great pleasure.
Really appreciate your getting up what amounts to the middle of the night, not just the early in the morning, to talk to us. My guest was Dr. Kingsley Dixon, Director of Science at King's Park and Botanic Garden, and Adjunct Professor in Plant Biology at the University of Western Australia in Perth. Don't go away. We've got lynx and hares coming up right after this short break.